The Bleed Smart Sportscast is brought to you by SunMaxBatteries.com, the go-to website for all your battery needs. SunMaxBatteries carries a full line of super heavy-duty, ultra-alkaline lithium and button cell batteries. SunMaxBatteries compares in quality to well-known national brands, and the best part, SunMaxBatteries are priced much lower than their competitors. Flashlights, remote controls, gaming controls, headphones, digital cameras, hearing aids, smoke alarms, whatever device you need a battery for, SunMax has the best batteries at the best price for your device. You can order a 24-pack of AA or AAA heavy-duty batteries for only $5.99, or a 24-pack of ultra-alkaline, ideal for all kinds of gaming and high-tech devices, at just $12.99. Order today and use coupon code BOSTON at checkout. That's coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase, at checkout, and save 20% off your entire order. 20% off those already low prices. Once again, that's coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase, at checkout, and save big today. SunMaxBatteries.com, CellMaxBatteries.com, the official sponsor of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys podcast. Thanks, as always, to Dolly Dreams for the intro music. This week, we're talking MLB trade deadline. The MLB trade deadline, about 3 days away, less than 3 days away now, actually. And we're joined to talk about that with one of the best MLB minds I know, Zach Grady, host of the Empire State of Mind pod and on Mesmerized Online as well. Zach, welcome to the show.
KJ, thank you for having me. Been too long, should have been on a little bit earlier, but I'm glad to be part of the MLB trade deadline special broadcast with you guys.
Yeah, an important one to be on, obviously, because a lot of moving parts, and one of the more star-powered trade deadlines that I can remember in recent memory. Like, we've seen some big ones, but this one, obviously, after the half season in 2020 where, you know, not a lot goes on for obvious reasons, teams might have been a little bit gun-shy on making trades because of the protocols and everything that were in place and, you know, weird situations, weird circumstances around that season. So this feels like, with, you know, the players we're going to get into, one of the more, you know, star-studded trade deadlines that I can remember, at least.
Oh, absolutely. There are some big names out there, and a lot of them, though, reside on a couple of teams. I mean, you have some of the big contracts of Chicago, Washington, and even, you got to say, Miami, who spent some money last year in that shortened season, who, you know, really have all underperformed this year. You know, so there are some big names, whether it be Scherzer, Bryant, you know, Kimbrel, Joey Gallo's even out there from the Rangers. And I think a lot of what it has to do, though, is if you look at the schedule, there seems to be almost two classes of teams this year. And there certainly is, definitely if you look out NL West, there's a tier one and then almost a tier two. And the tier two teams are certainly selling off a little bit quicker than you normally would when you look at the records as a whole throughout MLB.
Yeah, and it does feel like, kind of because of that powerhouse set of teams, those three teams, the Giants, the Dodgers, and the Padres in the NL West, that it's created a weird dynamic for all the teams in the NL, where, like, you see these teams in, you know, the AL East and the NL East, I should say, in the NL Central, where, you know, it's not like they're terrible. They're hovering around 500 right now, but they're just so far out of any wild card race that it's like, if you're one of those teams, if you don't think you could win, you can win your division, you almost have to be sellers, because it just feels like there's no way anyone is catching whoever the two of those three teams who end up being the wild card teams are going to be. Like, it just feels like it's kind of a hopeless endeavor. So unless you think you have a chance to win your division, you know, you might as well sell off Brian or Rizzo, whoever you have to do, because, I mean, you don't have many other options this season with the way things are going in the NL.
No, you're absolutely right. It is almost a reverse of what we thought expectations would be going into the year. Certainly as someone who covers a team in the NL East, predictions were four of those teams were going to be above 500. Not necessarily, you know, dominant like you see the Dodgers, San Diego, and San Francisco being, especially in their run differentials, but just necessarily four teams that were going to finish above 500. The wild card was a realistic expectation for a team like the Mets or a team like Philadelphia with the Braves in the division. The Braves now sit two games under 500, eight back in the wild card. I mean, that is probably the team that has been the most disappointing out of any this year. But the way that the Dodgers and San Diego and San Francisco have played, for a team in the NL East, a team in the NL Central, yeah, you really have to go out there and win your division. Now, the NL Central, you got Milwaukee, you know, sitting, I think, 5.5 or 6.5 up at this point on Cincinnati. And Cincinnati is a couple games over 500, but it almost seems like a lost season for them as well. So, yeah, unless you have a stronghold on the division, the wild card is not a realistic expectation in the NL this year.
So let's just jump right into the Cubs, because it feels like everything regarding the trade deadline is going to center around them this year. And they're hovering around 500, but it sounds like they're ready to sell off pieces. They're kind of open for business. And you already mentioned a few of the big names there, all of them, really. And Rizzo was the big one that was floating around rumors today. He was linked heavily to the Red Sox by Jeff Passan. He said that at least the Cubs and Red Sox are starting to have preliminary talks about Rizzo, which is interesting. And Rizzo, you know, I would say, you know, on the safe to say he's kind of on the downside of his career, kind of aging out of his prime a little bit. Not the player he once was, but for a team like the Red Sox right now that's, you know, trying Bobby Dahl back at first base and could use a little bit of an upgrade there, I think Rizzo still easily fits the bill of someone that you'd want to bring in. And still, you know, a 20 home run guy in mid-20s, he could potentially get there this season, but, you know, not really the all-star that he was a few years ago.
No, I mean, when you look at Chicago, that was a team that going into the year, everyone looked at as sellers, and they kind of outperformed and maybe had that a little chip on their shoulder because of the trade talk. But as just because of the performance necessarily of Milwaukee in that division, the Cubs definitely look to be sellers with a couple of days left. And again, you look at run differential, they're minus 20 this year. So they don't necessarily have the firepower to catch up to Milwaukee. So if you can get some pieces back for Rizzo, for Bryant, for Kimbrel, even possibly Javi Baez, yeah, absolutely. I think the Cubs are ready to make those moves. They certainly seem to be ready to make those moves leading into the season. As for, you know, ties to the Red Sox, obviously first base is something that is a position of need for Boston. They certainly are looking at Rizzo, but I could see the Red Sox possibly getting a Jonathan Schoop out of the Tigers, somewhere who can play first base, maybe play a couple of other positions as well, not cost as much. And, you know, he's come from some winning cultures in the past. I know Detroit has been a tough place to play as of recently, but he's certainly been hot since Memorial Day and could be a good fit in Boston as well.
Yeah, and I think it is interesting with the Cubs because, you know, it's just kind of been a terrible year for everybody on the roster, and it's not like Rizzo or Bryant or, you know, Contreras or any of those guys are playing terrible. Like, they're, you know, or Javi Baez is playing really good, but it just feels like they don't have anyone playing at the their star players have taken a step back, and then their surround supporting cast there is just playing terrible. Like, it's, you know, it's not, I mean, Ian Happ's having a really rough season, and Jason Hayward you can throw in there as well. Like, neither of those guys is performing as well as they need to be. And so you look at the roster and you kind of say there's some talent to pick from there. And it doesn't feel like it's just going to be interesting how the Cubs are going to approach this as far as what they need to get back, because it feels like, so far at least, as I said, it seems like they're at the center of all of these things, the trade deadline with all the potential names that they could have to offer. But I get the sense, especially because nothing really feels like come close to happening or happened yet, that their asking price might just be a little too high for some of the teams around the league.
Well, this is an opportunity for the Cubs to necessarily set their ball club or reset their ball club for the next 10 to 15 years. You have 3 to 4 pieces on that roster that could be, you know, game changers for teams going down the stretch in September and October. And at the end of the day, the Cubs are still just a game under 500. You know, they're playing 500 baseball, but compared to the other teams in their division, they're not on that tier. So if you're the Cubs, if you're ready to reset the roster, which it seemed like they were at the beginning of the season, there was a lot of talk about reducing the overall salary, you know, getting the payroll down, getting rid of some of these big contracts. With 3 days left before the deadline, how much are you willing to give up to get those things in return? Because again, with a Chris Bryant, a Javi Baez, Anthony Rizzo, and Craig Kimbrel, you have an opportunity to get 8, 9, 10, 11 prospects to rebuild your farm system. And some of those prospects are going to have to be, you know, high up prospects in, you know, these different organizations. I'll take Chris Bryant, for example. If he's to go to the Mets, you know, which is rumored, which has been out there, which I don't know if it's going to happen, in my personal opinion. You know, it's not going to get Brett Batty or Francisco Alvarez, your top two or three prospects, but you're going to have to throw in a top prospect. You know, you look at a JT Ginn, who's a pitcher, or a Khalil Lee, Mark Ventos, you know, your 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 prospects. One of those is going to have to go in each of those trades to get Bryant or Rizzo or Kimbrel, or, again, with Baez, it may be two of those prospects.
Yeah, and with Bryant, I think it was reported today also that besides just the Mets, which obviously you're right, one of the teams he's been heavily linked to, the Rays have emerged now too as someone that they're saying has get involved in talks for Bryant, which is interesting after they already traded for Nelson Cruz. Felt like, okay, that's a Rays type of move, you know, get Nelson Cruz on the cheap and, you know, move on from there. But they seem like they're really gunning for it. And, of course, fighting for that division with the Red Sox plays into that a lot as well. So, I mean, they are, I, you know, after, go, you know, talking about the whole analytic route with the Rays and them going, you know, that sort of way, they are going for some of the stars on this market now this time around. So it'd be interesting if Bryant found his way there as well. And I just find it interesting you talked about, like, the level of prospect you would have to give up. You know, with Bryant being a free agent at the end of the year, I just think it's so hard to ask teams like the Rays or the Mets to give up prospects that are that high end for a guy that they still don't know what the situation's going to be, if he's going to re-sign with them or not.
Well, that's always the risk that you run when you have some of these rental players. And, you know, especially looking at Chris Bryant, who is going to still want a larger contract. He's not someone who's necessarily going to re-sign with you before the end of the season, so he's looking probably to test the market. But in that regard, you know, you only have so many opportunities to go out and get the commissioner's trophy. You only have so many opportunities with some of these ball clubs, the way that they're consisted and put together, whether it be San Diego, whether it be Milwaukee, New York. You know, if you go into the AL, you know, obviously, Houston's been together for a little while, and Chicago is a very young team, but you only have so many runs at this. So I think whatever prospect it may take, ultimately the opportunity to get a former NL MVP for your stretch run. I just look back to 2015, where the Mets went ahead and made a move to get Cespedes, and that was one of the catalysts to get to the 2015 World Series. You look back when, you know, Boston traded Manny Ramirez to the Dodgers. Manny had an incredible season that year, and the Dodgers went right behind him. And Manny was going to be a free agent coming after that. So I think sometimes it's worth the opportunity, because especially in this sport, you don't know when you're going to get that opportunity again.
Yeah, and going back to Rizzo a little bit too, it would be very interesting to see him back in Boston, because obviously, that's where he started his career. He was drafted. He was a minor leaguer there, and he was one of their best prospects and highly touted. He hyped up a lot, and then eventually, you know, just goes in the Adrian Gonzalez deal, which ultimately did not work out for the Red Sox. So now having this come full circle, having him come back, it'd be a little bittersweet, but it would certainly be interesting. I think that I saw a mock trade for someone else we'll get into later, but having Rizzo return for a lot of those reasons, a lot of those storylines, would be really fun. But I do want to get to Kimbrel real quick and then wrap up and go to talk about Scherzer a little bit next, because Kimbrel, it was interesting to see, was also linked to the Red Sox. There's a lot of other teams. The White Sox were listed as one of several teams that potentially could be in on him as well. And that's weird too. It seems like the Red Sox are trying to get a reunion going with everybody. If only they could get Mookie Betts back in the door too. But, you know, Kimbrel, the idea of bringing him back strikes me as a bit odd, considering their bullpen has kind of been a strength this year, and Matt Barnes is playing well as the closer. It feels like that's kind of a situation all season where it's been, you're waiting for him to kind of revert back to being Matt Barnes and not being the really good in the role, but he has been to this point. So it's interesting to me that they would also target Kimbrel, and if they did bring him in, I would be curious to see
who becomes the closer in that situation? Because if you're trading for Kimbrel and you're going to give him the closer spot, that's a little disrespectful to Matt Barnes, considering he's held it down for you all season. So I would be very intrigued to see if they made a move like that, who would be just sitting in the role as the setup man and who would sit in the role as the closer, or how much they alternated throughout the remainder of the regular season.
Yeah, you know, whenever you bring in someone like that, and I can't speak for the Red Sox clubhouse and what the dynamics are there, so it's going to be different in every situation. But the way that the game is played now, and you've seen this over the last few years in who the champions are, if you have a strong bullpen, you can always make it stronger. Arms in the bullpen, and especially guys who can throw that hard, the way that the game is played right now, when we get into the playoffs, you have short leashes on a lot of your starting pitchers. So when you are going to the bullpen in the fourth, fifth, sixth inning, to have guys that can throw 100 miles an hour, bringing in a Kimbrel for the back half just moves everyone up an inning. You know, a guy who's pitching in the fifth inning can now go to the fourth. So you can get around some of the situations that you have with starting pitching when it comes to the playoffs. So a team like Boston, a team like Chicago, the White Sox that are making these runs, there's nothing wrong with strengthening your strength. I think that's something that I think all of the playoff teams are going to look to end up doing.
Yeah, and if it becomes an arms race as far as, you know, the Rays trading for Chris Bryant, it would be very interesting to see the Red Sox say, you know what, if you're going to load up on hitting, we're going to load up on pitching, we're going to, you know, like you mentioned, make our strength the strength and just try to make ourselves as unhittable as possible. So that would be really fun. Just wrapping up that point about who would be the closer, you know, I say that, yeah, as disrespectful as it would be to Matt Barnes to make Kimbrel the closer and take away that role from him, it would kind of be more disrespectful to Kimbrel if you brought him in and made him a setup man. I mean, this is a guy that you could argue over the last decade, if you were to pick one guy who would be the face of closers over this span, it'd probably be Kimbrel. I mean, you know, he's not what he used to be over the last, you know, five or so years, you know, what he was back at the beginning of the 2010s, but he's still a really good closer. He's still, I think, tied for third in the league in saves right now, despite being on a Cubs team that's, you know, been faltering a little bit. So, I really don't know what the decision's going to be there, but it is going to be an interesting one. And if they make that move, it's going to be fascinating. I think if they did, it's hard to argue that any team has a better bullpen than the Red Sox do right now. Because if they put Kimbrel in there to put him over the top, that is absolutely ridiculous. And I certainly would not want to face them in the late innings. As it is, their starting pitching is kind of been the weak spot, and it's been their bullpen that's come in, and that's why they lead the league in comeback victories, because they get down with their starting pitching and their bullpen comes in, and then they just they take off from there, and the bullpen shuts it to the other team's offense down or does a nice job of it. Anyway, let's get to a pitcher that might help that Red Sox starting pitching or another team starting pitching. Max Scherzer, the biggest, arguably the best player on the market, and if he is on the market or not. It was interesting because the Nationals were said to be one of these teams that was debating, you know, heading into the last couple of weeks, are we going to be buyers? Are we going to be sellers? And they've gone 3-7 in their last 10. So it seems like they've gotten their answer if they were looking for one. The team did not rise to the occasion, and perhaps it is time to look to move on from, you know, one of the best pitchers we've seen in the MLB and of this generation. So that, if he was on the move, certainly there'd be a lot of teams interested. I think there was a list of teams that were interested earlier in the day, and I forgot to pull it up now just as I was saying that. It's a long list. The Dodgers, the Giants, the Padres, the Red Sox, the Rays, so the Red Sox and Rays there again, the Blue Jays, the Astros, and the Mets. And it says the Yankees checked in, but we're told he was unlikely to okay a trade there. Mets could be a long shot for the same reason. So it sounds like, for whatever reason, Scherzer's interest in going to New York is limited, but it feels like the wheels are starting to churn on sending him somewhere.
Look, there is a lot to unpack with Max Scherzer, and I'm going to try to do this once at a time, because you gave me a lot to go off of as well, and everything you said certainly tells the tale of where he may end up. But when it comes to the Yankees, I'll start there only just because they're the Yankees. They're four games over 500 right now, but likely not a real player going down the stretch, but they're never going to be sellers. So yeah, they checked on in Max Scherzer, because if Brian Cashman doesn't check in on Max Scherzer, he's not doing his job. As for the Rays and the Red Sox, I find it a lot more likely that the Rays would be really invested in Scherzer than they are in Bryant. I think the thing with Chris Bryant, with the Rays checking in on them, is necessarily him not going somewhere else. They may just be smoke screening with Chris Bryant, because I don't see them taking on any part of his $19.5 million salary for this season. So the Scherzer thing is a lot more real when it comes to Tampa Bay. But ultimately, I see Scherzer headed to the West Coast. I think the Dodgers are the real team to look at with Scherzer, especially with everything that's going on with all of the rest of their pitching. That was supposed to be one of the best starting rotations in baseball, and two-thirds of it may not be back this season, and their big free agent may not be back ever. So I think with everything that has happened with Trevor Bauer, this gives them an opportunity to wipe the slate and hit reset necessarily by bringing in Scherzer and kind of more or less forgetting about Trevor Bauer and letting him disappear and just fade off into whatever may be in his ultimate future. The Mets, they went out and got Rich Hill, and the Mets are more or less making a trade for a pitcher anyway this week, because everything out of New York sounds like Carlos Carrasco is finally going to make his return. So my bet with Max Scherzer is that he will end up in LA.
I mean, that would be something if you're the Dodgers, and, you know, I understand, I totally agree about the Trevor Bauer thing, and if you're never going to get him back, which certainly feels like it has to be on the table, it has to be something that's a very serious possibility, that's, I don't know what you do if you're the Dodgers, because your payroll is already the highest in the MLB by far. Their payroll is over $250 million. Like, it is ridiculous. So if you put Scherzer on top of that, and I understand it's just for one season, just for, you know, not that much of his salary, but it's like, man, if you keep writing those big checks, I mean, that's getting to be a lot.
I get that. But look, once you go over the luxury threshold, and I mean, this is not my quote, this is from Steve Cohen, and I will trust him on finances at any time. If you go over by the luxury threshold by a dollar, then go over by $100 million. You know, there's no point of just going over and then not taking advantage of it. And the other thing, and this is, you know, to the Dodgers, I don't want to say advantage, I don't want to say benefit in any way whatsoever, but the fact is if Trevor Bauer does not ever come back, they're likely going to get a lot of that money back as well. So the payroll thing, I understand right now you may be signing checks to Trevor Bauer, but ultimately, if he never pitches again for the Dodgers, a lot of that money is going to be coming back to Los Angeles out of the Bauer household.
Well, I do understand that, like, you know, what your point there, if you're over $1, go over $100 million, then I totally agree. And look, the Dodgers have money to spend. The Dodgers are not afraid to spend money, clearly. But I just wonder, and of all the teams in the MLB, they're the team that has to worry the least about this. But I just wonder, like, in the year coming off the pandemic, with all the financial stuff, like, how much money are you going to spend? Like, they're already spending almost over $50 million more than any other team. Like, the Yankees are the only other team over $200 right now. It is, and the Mets are right behind, close behind, $197. But it's just, it is mind-boggling to think that the Dodgers are going to just continue. Like, at what point do you say, all right, that's as much as we can spend?
When you're already that much in, and I understand that, it's a lot of money, but this is a team that more or less prints money. This is a team that already knew they were going to be above the luxury threshold. They spent a lot of money, and a lot of it's going to be coming off the books soon too, though. So if you go in all in for 1 year, so be it. And we can't act like the Dodgers wouldn't have been one of the contenders to sign Max Scherzer anyway in the free agent market at the end of the year. So I mean, I'm looking at the Dodgers pitching probables right now, and I see three TBDs in the next 5 days. So it's something that they need some help in. I mean, they have Price and Buehler still going. I mean, Kershaw is there, but they need some help. And the name that they went out and got is likely not returning for the rest of the year. So to replace a Bauer with a Scherzer might be something that you have to look into for Dodger Blue, especially seeing that the Giants and the Padres are going to be loading up as well. It's not like the Giants or Padres are going to be standing pat as we go into the next 72 hours.
Well, I'll say this. I would agree with you more, and I don't totally disagree with you, but I'd agree with you more if it wasn't for the fact that the Dodgers just won the World Series last year, and we're not too far removed from that Mookie Betts trade where they sent some of their better prospects out the door. So I want, and a lot of it's going to depend on what the cost is for Scherzer, but are you going to continue to replete your farm system, and are you going to continue to do so when, I would understand if they didn't win the World Series, if it was like still the mode where like, we need to win one here. Like, we haven't won in forever, and we're this team that's spending all this money, and I understand that they're in a perfect world, there shouldn't be a hesitation to say, we want to do just as much every year to win as we possibly can. We don't care about, you know, like, but there's still that desperation to win when you haven't won in a while. And that's part of why they went out and got Mookie Betts in the first place. So I wonder if there is still going to be that drive in the Dodgers front office to be like, we have to go get Max Scherzer.
I don't think Max Scherzer is going to cost as much as necessarily Chris Bryant or Craig Kimbrel will. Especially with the news coming out today that Strasburg's going for surgery on his neck. The Nationals weren't necessarily going to re-sign Scherzer at the end of the season anyway. To be able to get something for him when the possibility that come next year and for the rest of both of these guys' career, neither of them might be a Nat. I don't know if Strasburg's ever going to be able to come back and be who he was undergoing neck surgery. The same type of neck surgery that... Look, we all saw the zip on the ball of Peyton Manning disappear after this surgery. So what's it going to do to a guy who's supposed to throw high 90s? So I think the Nationals are in a situation now, especially with their play over the last 10 games and the injury to Strasburg, that they really necessarily need to hit the reset button. And their big trade piece that they may move, it might be Trey Turner. I think that will get them the big prospects back. I think Scherzer may not cost as much as teams are making it out to be.
And you talked about the Yankees a little bit being buyers at the deadline and seemingly questioning that a little bit. Obviously, we heard the stuff that they made an offer for Trevor Story, and they're apparently, you know, waiting to hear back on that or still negotiating, whatever the case may be. But it was interesting, and the Yankees right now are about, I think, 4.5, 3.5, something like that, back of the Athletics in the wild card race. And they also trailing the Mariners there, the Angels, Indians, and Blue Jays are behind them. I guess I should say Guardians now, although it's officially still says Indians, but Blue Jays right on their tail as well. So are you of the mind that the Yankees being buyers at this deadline would be a mistake?
I don't think the Yankees are a playoff team. I think they're going to be buyers because they're the Yankees. I mean, is it a mistake if you could bring in a guy like Max Scherzer? No, not necessarily, because that could be someone who you would re-sign. That tends to happen when someone is traded to the Yankees. But I certainly do not think they're a playoff team. I think if they buy anyone at this point in time, it will be just for the regular season. I don't see them getting to the point where they are nearly as good as Boston or Tampa Bay in the division. So, you know, are they going to get better than the Mariners? Likely. I think so. I mean, the Mariners have a minus 49 run differential right now. There's only so long you can keep up that pace and remain over 500. But I don't think that they're as good as Oakland, certainly. And I don't think necessarily they can even hold off Toronto all season. So the Yankees may make a move, but a lot of times, and this is just comes from the New York market, and you can understand this with the Boston market, and especially last year with what happened with Mookie Betts. Teams like this don't understand why you're selling off. Teams like that don't understand the idea of being a seller. So I don't ever see Brian Cashman actively selling parts of his team. He's always going to check in on the big names and make sure that the Yankees are winning the back page battle against the Mets, who, frankly, all season they haven't been. And if they are on the back page, it's because they're losing, not winning.
Well, as far as the Scherzer stuff with the Yankees, it was interesting to hear that they checked in. They were told that he wouldn't okay a trade there, and the Mets being a long shot for the same reason. I would figure, you know, the obvious reason why the Mets would be a long shot is because the Nationals wouldn't want to trade him in the division. But what is it with Scherzer in New York not wanting to be there? Like, is there some, like, huge gripe with New York that I'm unaware of that Max Scherzer has, or the people of New York City? Like, what's going on there?
I mean, it takes a different type of person. It's a different breed to be able to survive in New York, to be able to thrive in New York. I mean, you've seen some of the game's best go to New York and shrivel and then go somewhere else and return to form. So whether he doesn't want to do that or whether he thinks it's disrespectful or whether, frankly, he just doesn't think the Yankees are a playoff team, I mean, that's fine. He has a no-trade clause, so if he wants to control where he wants to go, so be it. Not everyone can be a New Yorker, and clearly Max Scherzer just isn't a New Yorker.
Yeah, I suppose not. Is there any other names you wanted to touch on? I know Jose Berrios is a big one with the Twins, Joey Gallo, Starling Marte potentially could be on the move as well. Are there any of those guys that you really have something that you wanted to dig into on them?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say dig into, but I think of any of the four that you just mentioned, Marte is the most likely to be moved. I know that the Marlins did offer him an extension, but with the dollars and the years, it didn't seem like it was a serious extension. That's one of those type of moves that you make so you can tell your fan base that I made a move and he was the guy who didn't accept it. You know, we wanted him to be here. He didn't want to be here.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like the Red Sox did the same thing with Mookie Betts when they sent him out the door.
So that likely is the person who's most, in my opinion, going to be on a different team after the end of the 72 hours as we get ready for the trade deadline. So, but other than that, I think a lot of this is just what it is every year. You know, a lot of conversation, a lot of talk. Some of the big names probably have already been moved. You mentioned Nelson Cruz. I think Adam Frazier is a big move that people haven't talked about. Jock Peterson, I thought, would have been a big move, but it doesn't seem like the Braves are ever going to really get it in gear. So I think the Adam Frazier and Nelson Cruz may be the big moves, but I likely see Scherzer getting moved to the Dodgers and Marte getting moved at some point as well.
So let me just, you mentioned the possibility of the big moves not being named. And even if they aren't, I'll stand by what I said about this being one of the most fun traded lines. I mean, there are so many big names being thrown around that, like, even if they don't get moved, it's going to be a blast going into July 30th and that 4 p.m. deadline. But I just want to really quickly run through. I'm going to give you, a handful of names and just tell me how many of these guys you think actually find a new club before the deadline. So if we're talking Scherzer, Bryant, Kimbrel, Marte, and Rizzo and Story, how many of those guys do you think are actually going to find themselves on a new club?
All right, so Scherzer, yes, I do think he gets moved. I think the news of Steven Strasburg has changed the Nats' future for the next few years, and they're going to try to get something back for him. I don't think he gets moved for what everyone thinks he's going to get moved for, and the Dodgers are going to luck out and end up getting Scherzer. Bryant, I don't think gets moved. I think it's a lot of talk. I would love to say he would end up in blue and orange in the NL East, but I do not think he gets moved. Kimbrel, yes, I do think he gets moved. To where, I don't know. I could see the White Sox being the front runner on that. Anytime you can add a power arm in the bullpen in a stretch run, it's always an advantage. Marte, 1,000%, I think it's moved. That is just because that is the Marlins, and that's what the Marlins do. Whether it is Wayne Huizenga, or whether it is Jeffrey Loria, or now that it's Derek Jeter in that group, he's on his way out the door. Story, if you would have asked me at the All-Star game, I would have said yes, 100%, because it just seemed like that was what the Rockies organization was trying to give him, was his farewell, have him be the ambassador, be in the Home Run Derby. It seemed like that was his goodbye. But it doesn't seem like there's as many suitors for Story because a lot of people are waiting on Chris Bryant. I think if the Mets ended up making a move, it's more likely that they would get Story than they would get Bryant. And I know you said one more, and I can't remember.
Did you say Rizzo already? Did we get Rizzo in there?
I didn't say Rizzo. I would like to say, for the Red Sox fans listening out there, that Rizzo probably doesn't get moved to Boston. I think Boston is more than likely in on the Jonathan Schoop sweepstakes, and he is certainly hot. You know, he has been red hot since June 1st. You know, just shy 600 slugging. He's got a dozen homers, I believe. You know, 335 or so that he's hitting. That's a guy that going into the second half of the season, if you end up making that move, that could be paying $4.5 million compared to, you know, whatever Rizzo is making right now. That's a great move. I think Rizzo's making four times $4.5 million.
All right, Zach. Well, thank you for joining us. It should be fun. I can't wait. I'm very excited as we get through these next 3 days. Already, today's feels like is when it really picked up. Like, today's when the rumor mill really started churning and gave us a lot to chew on. So I was excited about that. And I just can't wait. It's going to be a fun deadline. Thank you so much for joining us, Zach. And guys, be sure to check out Zach's podcast, Empire State of Mind Pod. You can check it out on Twitter at Empire State Pod. And check out Zach on Twitter at UZig. I'm Zach. Zach, thanks so much again.
Hey, thank you so very much for having me. Like I said, I should have been on so much earlier. That is my apologies to you. You guys run an amazing ship over there. And hey, anytime you want to do a home and home, you are always welcome on the Empire State Pod as well.
Absolutely. Just let me know. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at @ByKJDoyle. Follow the pod on Twitter at @WickedSmartPod. Check out everything over at Guy Boston Sports. And head over to the Guy Boston Sports YouTube channel literally just right now. Okay, just hit subscribe because it's closing in on 1,000. It's going to get there. And if you're there before 1,000, you could win Evan's $100 giveaway for the 1,000 subscribers. So just literally just go over there and hit subscribe. And then unsubscribe if you want. Don't tell them I told you this, but unsubscribe if you want after the giveaway. But literally just get in there before the giveaway happens. Get yourself a chance at $100, if nothing else, okay? So head over there and do that. And once again, thank you so much for listening, guys. We'll see you in just a couple days.